who will be the next Pope after Pope Francis, whether he resigns, whether he dies, who are the leaders who would most likely be elected from the College of Cardinals? Tim, let's get it started. You've got a few. I got a few. We're going to talk about our hopefuls, the people who we would hope become Pope. But then we're going to get down into the nitty gritty and say these are the guys who will most likely be the Pope because Pope Francis has stacked the College of Cardinals. So, Tim, obviously our hopefuls would be Burke. Right? That'd be the ideal if it could happen.
Yeah.
Brand Mueller, but you know, Brand Mueller's so old.
Yeah, he's old. He's really, really old. He would still take him.
Yeah, he's 90. But, he's 90 years old. So for them to
elect, is he 90?
Yeah, I mean I mean the only way they would elect 85. Him if they just wanted to get someone, you know, who'd be a very short papacy. Maybe a 3-year papacy, 5-year papacy.
Yeah. I didn't realize he was that old. You know, but I never thought he would be Papabile anyway.
No.
Burke would be nice. Burke's the right age.
Burke's 70.
Yeah, he's a perfect age. He's a sprightly young man of 70.
Exactly.
In Papabile terms, he would be great. But look, he's a marked man. I mean, I know you do a show like this, and the TNT viewers out there want to hear Burke is, you know, contender number one. Sarah is number two. I guess it is Sarah, not Sarah. And you know, all the good guys are 3, 4, 5, and 6. But these guys are marked men, and there's a reason they're silent, right?
I don't know
what the reason is.
So I've heard one theory. So I mean, basically, we have Burke, Sarah. I call him Sarah. I never heard Sarah before. You heard Sarah?
I've been getting corrected. Yeah. Saying this is EWTN gives an official pronunciation
as Sarah.
Like Sarah, but
I'm gonna say Sarah.
All right. Me too.
Okay.
We'll
so
stick with it.
Brand Mueller, he's 90, and then Arinze, he's kind of a throwback candidate. You know, he was sort of a leading conservative 10 years ago. Everybody talked him up like he's going to be the first African Pope. He's 86 now. So I don't likely see that happening. You and I both agree on who would be the African Pope who would not be conservative. We'll get to him later in the show. So these four, it's just such a long shot. It'd be a miracle if any of them got elected. Some people have said the reason why Cardinal Sarah is not saying anything, he's quiet right now. He literally wrote the book on silence. Is Burke and Brandmuir are doing the battle like linemen, and they're opening up the hole, and Sarah's going to run through it and be their papal candidate. That's why he's staying back.
That would be great if the way conclaves operated were even more fixed and predictable, right? You might say, okay, this is worth cost-benefit analysis. Cardinal Sarah, we kind of need you in the fight, and Burke and Brandmuir, the fight, we're not even in the fight that much. I mean, we talk about how these guys go dark too, but for long periods of time, what's the explanation for that? But like, if they're the fighters in this situation, and I guess they're saying we need you in the fight, Cardinal Sarah. The downside of this is you're not sure you're going to get him to be Pope anyway. I mean, he's already on the outs with this curia and with this pontificate. So we'd rather just have you in the fight, fly your banners high, catch the breeze, and ride the popularity of, you know, whatever conservative spring tide there is in the church. Ride that combined with being the first African Pope and whatever other things you can get, you know, October surprise. That's a better game plan than just stand down for the next 4 years, write a book on silence, don't say anything, you know, and then hope that somehow they already know you're a conservative, hope that somehow all the liberal cardinals who still have a preponderance will forget you're conservative anyway. It sounds like a bad game plan.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of realistic hope.
No. I think the TNT consensus here is these three to four guys are not likely to walk out on the loggia after this Pope by a long shot, you know?
Right.
It's kind of like in Dumb and Dumber when Mary Samsonite says, I wouldn't, how's it go? I wouldn't date you if you were like the last man on earth or
she goes,
one in a million.
What are the chances of a girl like you and a guy like, of a guy like you and a girl like me getting together? And she goes, not good. And he goes, not good, like one in 10. And she goes, not good, like one in a million. And then he says,
so you're saying there's a chance.
You're telling me there's a chance.
So when it comes to Brandmuller, we're saying like there is a chance.
Right.
But it doesn't look good. It's kind of like, what was his name? What was Jim Carrey's name?
Lloyd.
Lloyd. It's
Lloyd, Lloyd Christmas. Yeah,
Burke, when it comes to the papacy, is kind of like Lloyd. But you know, in real life, Jim Carrey did marry that girl, I heard.
He did. He broke up with his wife to marry that girl.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. His wife stuck with him while he was,
right,
you know, in the trade, as they call it. And he broke up, married whatever her name is.
Mary Samsonite.
I was way off.
So I'm sad to say, TNT fans, that this probably won't happen, barring a miracle or somehow a major restructuring of the College of Cardinals.
Of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, and the Catholic
this
Church.
This is not good. Entering any kind of election, unless you say, well, there's a constitutional democracy or some sort of system, and you say, look, there is a chance, but that chance requires a major restructuring of the constitutional system. It's like, well, yeah, so we're telling you, no, this ain't going to. Yeah. Like, it's bad. It's going to stay bad, I think. I don't. How many cardinals has Pope Francis personally nominated?
Let me look it up. I got it right here.
Is it 49?
It's a lot.
It's not negligible.
It's serious. Here it is. Okay, so people need to know there's cardinals and there's cardinal electors, and I'll take a moment to explain that in just a minute. But right now, of the electing, those cardinals who are eligible to elect a pope in conclave, 14% of those cardinal electors were chosen by John Paul II. 38% of those were chosen by Benedict XVI, and 47% were chosen by Pope Francis. So people say, oh, Francis has chosen over half the cardinals. Not quite yet. The next conclave, most likely, and also those cardinal electors of John Paul II are getting closer to the age where they're no longer an elector. So probably within the year, Francis will have over 50%.
And how do we know what number?
Oh yeah, I got the number. So there are 123 currently able to vote, and 18 are John Paul II, 47 are Benedict XVI, and 58 are Pope Francis appointees.
Good night.
So yeah.
Dang, dude.
Of the 123, 58 are handcrafted by Pope Francis.
That's bad. That's so bad.
Doesn't look good, folks. I mean, we talk about, you know, we talked with Michael Voris over the weekend. That was a good video. And, you know, how Pope Francis needs to resign. And he needs to resign based on justice, on what has been covered up and the things coming out of Argentina now. You know, if you do something this bad, you should resign. But it's not like that fixes the church. We just go to Francis 2.0.
Right. Right. So, did you want to address that? You weighed in on Twitter, whether or not this is likely.
Yeah, I think I think that Pope Francis will likely resign in the next 12 months. Maybe by this time next year. I think one of his concerns is Benedict's still alive, and so he's kind of keep stacking the bench with guys in white cassocks. You know, Tim, I've never said this on camera, but I'm really against Ratzinger wearing the papal white. When he announced that, I just thought, that's a bad idea.
I feel like we've implied it very strongly several times.
Yes.
But I mean, you and I.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am too, for the record. I thought people knew we thought that. But
yeah, I just want to make it clear.
They don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And interesting is Burt came out and said that, which I thought was bold for him to say something against Ratzinger. That he said it's confusing. He said it's confusing. Yeah. And it was a negative. It was in a negative cast. Yeah, it was last week. So
that was good.
Yeah, I mean, when Celestine resigned, he went back to his name and his normal life, what he had done before. Right. And I think Ratzinger should have done this. Hey, he should be Ratzinger. I don't know if he'd still be a Cardinal. Maybe. Yeah. Go back to being a Cardinal. Cardinal Ratzinger.
Well, a couple other things. Celestine had been Pope for a couple weeks and he, like, you know, bugged out. He couldn't take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had faked. He didn't know the life, you know. I mean, Ratzinger was basically Pope the last X number of years of the JP2 presidency as functioning CDF with a really sick Pope. And I just say X because everyone debates how long JP2 is sick. Some people say 8 years. Some people say 15 years. But he knew it well. He wasn't a great administrator in the sense that he was more an intellectual, but he knew what the heck he was doing. And then on top of that, X number of years, he was really CDF Pope under JP2. Then he had an 8.5 year pontificate, and he was very popular among conservatives, right? So that's the first weird point, is just, and I know I've said it before, but people have to understand that's, oh, this hasn't happened in 600 years. Well, it's kind of never happened with a guy that was well established, you know? And then you consider that the St. Gallen Mafia wanted Bergoglio, got Bergoglio to be number two in the 2005 conclave, which was really obscure that he would rank that highly. And their other decided goal was to avoid a Ratzinger papacy. But they got the Ratzinger papacy for 8 years. Then they ended up getting what they wanted at the very next conclave, meaning the switcheroo, Ratzinger out, Bergoglio in. This is very, very fishy. And so you take all that into consideration, and you know, I believe that things don't end up looking good. But so, yeah, Ratzinger stepping down was basically unprecedented. Celestine just bugged out after having not.
But still, he's a Pope. He's a Pope. And if you're not the Pope, you're not the Pope. You don't wear white. You don't wear the ring. You don't wear red shoes. You don't go by Papa Emeritus. What? That just does. And of course, this gets us this whole idea of the people who are the resignationists who say, well, he's still the Pope. We've covered that before. Neither of us give any credence to it. But maybe we should talk a little bit about the history of the College of Cardinals and voting and how the whole thing got started. And then let's look at Tim and I each picked who we think are going to be the next popes. And it doesn't look good, does it, Tim? None of them make us happy.
No one confuse it for a wish list. Because I would not want that next to my name. The couple that I think are most papabile, they're both Eastern Church guys. Yeah, and also it's not a, what is a wish list from my perspective. Dr. Marshall is weighed in. He thinks this will happen in 2019. I was talking to Pat Coffin about it. He was saying he agrees. I wish it would happen. Pat Coffin said, I agree. I think. This will happen in 2019, but I would wish otherwise. I'm exactly the opposite from the nature of leftist power mongering, the Saul Alinsky Marx type tactics, the way the left is. It's pirate code, I believe. Take what you can, give nothing back. So just, even though they probably do have a guy lined up because of what we just said about the College of Cardinals, I think it would be an undue risk for them. So I'm the exact opposite of what Pat Coffin said. I would love it if he would, because that's a shot. It's a shot. A new guy's better. But I think they would never, left just never concedes. They do what we should do on the right.
Well, I'm not saying that they're, obviously, if Francis resigns and they pick a new Francis 2.0, and any of the guys that we're going to talk about today would fill the shoes of Francis beautifully for their part. So they're not going to concede anything. What they're going to do is, Francis is collecting a lot of dust and a lot of controversy. So they said, hey, if we're going to push through our agenda, we're going to get women deacons, we're going to get married priests, we're going to get women priests, we're going to have put some sort of formal statement out about those who are civilly divorced and remarried can receive communion, and we're going to change the catechism on homosexuality. We need someone else who looks pure to do it, because Francis is starting, he's not looking, so he's getting some some smudges on his white cassock.
Some odors. Some proverbial odor. No, I, you know, that's all. I don't think they're doing it to be nice.
No.
Remember what Hans Gruber says in Die Hard when he's like, when the police are coming out, he's like, this is actually happening later than I thought it would happen. He's like, this was an inevitability. Yeah. Let's just carry on. And then he has a contingency plan for the police coming out. I think this is my point of view. This is my low, and people already know, this is my very low view of secular conservatives and Catholic conservatives. I think the Sontgolan Mafia, when they schemed all this out 20 years ago, I think they figured, look, if we get Bergoglio, the only guy for us in the papacy, you know, and he starts doing stuff. Francis has been doing stuff really, really gloves off since the end of year two. So I think they're pretty much like, look, as soon as he starts doing stuff end of year two, all the conservatives are going to jump on us, and even some of the middle world media. Well, I think they got more run out of him
than they expected.
Spotless Francis. Yeah, I think the conservatives are so feckless that we didn't jump on him when, you know, when we should have, proverbially, and say, look, this guy's really bad. So I think they're like, I think they're prepared to have a pontificate of dictator pope earlier on, and they're just like, but you can't make us give up power. That's really powerful.
Yeah, so but the thing is they're now not fighting against conservatives saying, hey, that's against the deposit of faith. They're now having to fight with the McCarrick situation and an outrage over sexual crimes in the clergy. I don't think they could have foreseen that. I'm not saying Francis is going to resign because, oh, hey, people are starting to get kind of ticked about women deacons. You better go away. No, they're going to go full charge with all of that. They're just worried that the McCarrick situation and this Rome summit, which was a total disaster, is discrediting Pope Francis, and he's losing his popularity. So I think, of course, they're not going to give any power back. They already got, as we've said in the beginning of the show, they've already got it lined up. They're going to get one of their guys in for Francis 2.0. I want to mention real quick.
We'll see. Yeah.
We both agree that. So if you want to know where Cardinals came from, I don't want to do a whole show on the history of Cardinals because it's a long history, but I wrote a book called The Eternal City. It's Rome and the origins of the Catholic Church. And there's a whole section on there on Cardinals, where they came from, how they developed. It's interesting that, and I will say this, that the Cardinals, if you go back to, say, I don't know, like 1050, 1130, guess how many Cardinals there were, Tim? 20.
Yeah, I knew there was like a couple dozen, three. Yeah,
20 Cardinals.
That's wild.
So yeah. There's not many. In 1352, the size of the college was again limited to 20. It drops down to even like 12 and 16 at some points. We're talking about an inner circle of the Pope electing the next Pope, which almost always ensured that it was someone close to the Pope who was elected, because it's a tiny group. I mean, think if you chose 12 of your closest friends, right? And then you died, it's pretty much a done deal that someone you like who is close to you and believes the same as you is going to be elected.
And there's people don't understand, like, what if he was a lifetime friend that was spying? It's like, your theory is that he posed as my friend, not even knowing that I would end up with a position of power for 40 years, established friendship, because he saw this coming. He's like, no way. Yeah, it's a very reliable system of picking.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. It's tight.
And the Council of Basel, this is early 1400s, or Basel, excuse me, expanded it to, drumroll please, 24 cardinals. Right? I mean, the idea here is the cardinals are somewhat like the apostles around Christ. It's a small, tight group of leadership. Now, it starts to grow once you get past the Reformation. You start getting, you know, beyond 24. You eventually get this number of 70, which is based on Moses. Moses chose 70 elders to guide him in the Old Testament. So they kind of moved it from the 12 apostles to the 70. Also, Christ had the 72, you know, disciples who were kind of the second tier after the apostles. So that begins to happen. But the person who blows the roof off of this is Paul VI. Paul VI says, I don't know, let's go have 120. Like, let's open it up. And Paul VI also, Tim, this is, I think, one of the greatest scams in church history that no one talks about. Paul VI says, oh, if you turn 80, you can't vote anymore.
Right. That's revolution.
It's a revolution. Because he's saying any cardinal I didn't appoint that are for my predecessors can't vote anymore.
Right.
By setting an age limit.
Right.
That would be like Francis saying, if you're over 70, you can't vote for the next pope. Which would take off all the John Paul II cardinals and all the Benedict XVI cardinals and make it a 100% Pope Francis election. That's what Paul VI did.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember covering that. That was actually the first time I learned it was in that show. But the ironic thing here is that the JP2 cardinals and the more JP2 than Benedict cardinals are all like Team Francis anyway, which is a different story than we're used to portraying. Electorally, the electoral structure of doing this, you talked about the theological ramifications, Moses, Jesus, that's all good stuff. Also, bulwarking the claim, electorally, think of like what even Will Durant says about Pax Romana, hereditary monarchs. The reason they work out is just a secular example of what you were talking about. Same thing. It's like, you know, the best form of monarchy being endorsed by Aristotle, St. Thomas, it probably means a sort of a non-hereditary monarch where you just name the best man like fictitiously Marcus Aurelius Alex Maximus because he's the closest thing to a philosopher king. He doesn't want the power. That works very nicely. And if you keep the group small, then conclaves, we don't know the inner working. There's a huge X factor when there's more people, you know, when it's a larger number. But when it's like, yeah, these are my 20 homies in the key, you know, in the conclave, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah. So, I mean, Paul VI, you know, he brought up to 134 voting cardinals at one point. He even went over his 120. That's a lot of people. And of course, they want to say the church is bigger, it's international. That was the argument. But what it does is it creates wings and parties within the College of Cardinals instead of it being tight. You know, even, you know, in the 1900s, you know, when there's election of, well, before then, Leo XIII and St. Pius X, I think those conclaves were about 50 or so. Cardinals. Mm. So still pretty tight. It's only since Vatican II that we have these enormous conclaves. Enormous. Okay, so that being said, which I think was a major win for the liberals, by the way, for the heterodox voice in the church, is to expand and enlarge the College of Cardinals. People don't talk about that, but we all need to understand that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Tim, who you got? Who do you think is going to be, if you had to pick one, who do you think it'd be? Let's just call him Pope Francis II. We'll call him that. Yeah. Pope Francis II.
Which is like a 75%
or
chance.
Or Paul
of
VII.
The actual.
Paul VII. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think they, I think they like Pope Francis too. It would send a real message. The funny thing is when you pick a pontifical titular, yeah, like everyone, since there's only been one Francis, if you're just like, I'm Pope Francis II, it would be a haunting way to start out your pontificate and be like, you know, I'm not missing a beat. I'm on board this programmatic scheme 100%. I mean, we would be haunted by that, and it would be, the gloves would already be off because they're like, well, I'm just continuing this program. Yeah, so for me, it's a toss-up. I'll go with, I think, the single most likely conservative to get in would be Cardinal Serra. But I think that's still
We already killed all that.
No. But so here's my logic. You gotta wait in here. So I think the only way they'd be protecting their ribs is there's a small October surprise chance of a Cardinal Serra because he'd be first African Pope. And not like a South African, a black African. Yeah. Yeah. So I think they would go Peter Cardinal Turkson, who has been a wildly enthusiastic Francis supporter. The guy's stats are perfect. Yep. The more I've looked into him over the past 2 years, his stats are really, really nice. And he looks great on paper. He would be the anti Sarah, you know, because I think Sarah is the only possible conservative that could even have, you know, larger than a 1% chance of stealing in there. And, you know, he would steal any thunder that Sarah might have. And he's been really the single big name bad, from my perspective or your perspective, bad African cardinal that any of us even know about.
Yeah, everyone says, oh, we need to get these African cardinals. Well, let's be careful. We need to look at the fine print. And Peter Turkson is an African. He's from Ghana. But he is on Team Francis. He is a liberal. He favors the modernist wing of the church. He's the same age as Sarah, by the way. They're both 70. So he's perfect. Yeah. I mean, Turkson is the perfect age. He's African. You know, it would be this, you know, you can't criticize him because he's African, because he's black. They'd have that coverage. So this makes a lot of sense. You know, I think I'm going to reveal one of mine that I think could also be it. But I think Turkson is our most likely future Pope Francis II, Paul VII. Whatever.
You agree?
Yeah, I think Turkson is on one. Paper. Turkson is the one who gets it. Yeah.
He heads, by the way.
Oh, yeah, this is great.
He heads the Dicastery for the Promotion of Integral Human Development. This is a frightening. This is the closest thing I've ever heard in the Dicastery. It's a made up ad hoc creation of the Francis Pontificate. It is the closest thing to one of the creepy New World Order Catholic addenda that you get in a book like Michael O'Brien's Father Elijah. Like that word integral, that mm-hmm. sounds, you know, if you look at the project of what that dicastery has done, I haven't looked at what work he's done specifically, but it is like the only openly sounding UN, New World Order, one world government, globalist, lefty kind of dicasteries, you know, congregations in the Roman Curia. It's creepy. I haven't kept a close eye on it, but I was always like, this is weird. And of course, Turkson was pulled from his post and stuck on that job. And that, you know, it's not good. It's not good.
Yeah. I mean, Turkson during Benedict the 16th, he has some really conservative stuff. You know, he backs up Pope Benedict that condoms aren't the solution for AIDS. Yes. He has some statements against LGBT agenda in Africa, but all this stuff dates from Pope Benedict the 16th reign, when it was safe and cool to say that kind of stuff. Since Pope Francis, we've seen this with a lot of guys like Schönborn. You know, when they lived under John Paul II, Benedict the 16th, they were these conservatives, and then as soon as Pope Francis put on the white zucchetto, these guys are full out modernists. It's like, what happened? Like, oh, there's a new pope. We get to pretend to be this, or really show our true colors. And that's my worry about Turkson as well. So I think it's interesting. We didn't pre-discuss this. We want it to be a surprise in the show. So I think it's interesting that we both think Turkson is the guy.
For sure. He said, by the way, just real quick, when he was asked about an African pope, he said that if God would wish to see a black man also as pope, well, thanks be to God. You think something else is coming at the end of the sentence. Right. And he's like, well, thanks to him, because I want to be Pope. I mean, they usually play humility awards when someone asks you, are you going to be Pope? You going to be president? But he sounds like he wants the job to me.
Yeah. Now, my close runner up would be Scola. Scola would be the safe compromise candidate. Scola was chosen by John Paul II. He's 77. So if you wanted to have a shorter pontificate and just get some breathing space and throw a bone to the conservatives, this would go against what we said earlier. You know, if you wanted to give back, he's an Italian, you know, so we had a Pole, we had Polish, we had German, we have Argentinian. It's like, okay, let's just take a breather here. Let's get an Italian, an older gentleman who have a short pontificate. I think Scola, who's from liberal Milan, would fulfill the agenda of everything Pope Francis wants to do, but he gives the appearance of returning to, you know, something pre-Vatican II, something that looks conservative, Italian and older.
Is he less conservative in act than I thought he was? I thought he was like one of the sort of quiet but maybe true conservative, but I've never researched him beyond last.
In the world of Pope Francis, he is. He is. So he would be a compromise if they wanted to go not do a Burke or a Sarah, you know, something like that. But if they wanted to get an older candidate who's more conservative and Italian, I can see maybe the Italian bishops wanting to favor him. And there's a good number of Italian cardinals who would support
him. Did you know? Well, I think I've said this on the show before. I don't know if I've said it off air. I mean, maybe I haven't. Did you know that I was so in the where were you at when when Francis was elected, I was working at an oil and gas company. I was checking, we had little media centers, you know, TV stands. It was a nice little setup, and you know, they'd announced, okay, the black smoke is coming out. So the announcement will be any second. I was just checking, hitting refresh at my desk, like mad, on the Wikipedia page for Roman Pontiff. You can go look this up. I experienced it firsthand. Said, I was checking Scola because I thought he was most papabile.
Right.
I was checking his page and I was going back and forth between refreshing Scola and then just Wikipedia page for Roman Pontiff. For Scola, boom, in the midst of waiting, it popped up. He is the 266th Roman Pope.
Whoa. Yes,
for 5 minutes. You can go look this up. I experienced it. They still talk about it online. We haven't talked about this before.
No, I've never heard.
He was number 266. It went down then. I mean, this is like a major conspiracy thing. I mean, it's also Wikipedia, so someone could have messed with it.
Yeah, somebody.
But he was up for 5 minutes, and I was like, oh, Scola, this is decent. I thought he was conservative at the time.
Right.
I didn't research him.
He's conservative in the current climate. I mean, he's a hardcore Balthazarian. He's written a book on Balthazar. So he's a JP2 conservative Balthazarian. So he's like a Bishop Barron kind of conservative, which neither of you consider that to be traditional or conservative. But that's where
Communion and liberation.
Exactly. Yeah. That's who Scola is. And so, you know, he has come out and said, I don't think that civilly remarried Catholics who are sexually active should receive communion. So he's on record of being somewhat anti-amoris, Letizia. In that way, he's closer to Burke. So if the conservatives could pull a candidate, or if the liberals wanted to throw a bone, Scola would be it. But I think if the Cardinals have been really ticked off by Francis, they might go Scola. But I think there's still enough Cardinal support for Francis out there that we won't see Scola.
Yeah, that would be almost optimal for us. Do you think he's second most likely? Or are you just going in no particular
order? Yeah, I think he's second most likely. I mean, when you look at the history of conclaves, and again, they're not supposed to reveal anything that goes on, but we have records from almost all of them. So they're either bugged or cardinals are being excommunicated, revealing the info, and then going to confession and getting unexcommunicated for it. But almost always there's a conservative and there's a liberal. People, you shouldn't say conservative and liberal in the Catholic Church. You're only Catholic. I get that. All right. But you understand what I'm saying. There's people who want to expand things pastorally, or people who want to stay rigid to the dogma and the tradition. I'll call those liberal and conservative, whatever.
I've never been on board for that.
And those two guys, except for like Pacelli, who was just a shoe-in, that's Pius XII. Before that, there's always tension, and those two guys can never get the two-thirds majority. And so they start looking around, and they look for someone who's between those two guys. And that's the guy who gets elected almost every time. And so, you know, Scola may be too far to the right for these cardinals. He may be the extreme. I mean, obviously Burke would be the furthest, but those who have a chance, Scola is probably the conservative candidate going in, and he's older. So I think he's likely. I'd put him in the top three.
Man, I'm a bit surprised you're that optimistic, but strange things happen. Also, one, I guess this would be one reason, another reason against sort of accidental that I would not share in that optimism. I think the tide is really with the identity politics that have come so fashionable again.
Yeah.
It became very deeply unpopular with liberals in the church. I do use that term for you know, openly with liberals in the church too. That we had like 400 years of straight, not just European popes, but Italian popes.
Yes.
After, or it might even be more than that, like everything after the Great Western Schism or something. I think it would be seen as, you know, a very anti-Francis agenda move to get any kind of conservative, any kind of Italian, you know, even if he's Archbishop of Milan. That used to be good for you. Now, in this SJW church that we've got on our hands, I think they're going Eastern. I think they know that.
By Eastern, you don't mean Eastern Catholic. You mean non-West.
I mean, Asia or Africa.
Yeah. Oh,
and, you know, they know that we'd probably be hoping the most for Sarah. So they're either going to go Turkson or my number two, most likely number three total on this list would be Cardinal Togle, who's also young and just maybe in the last 18 months, the most wildly, anytime he talks, he is just putting himself out there, flying the banner as a true believer in the Francis cause. And just there's nothing about this guy that you know goes against the program at all. Yeah. There's not any kind of Scola or even Turks and pause, you know, even at the end of Benedict's reign. Well, he's also very young. So
I put him in my top five. I think he's very young, and I think he's just not inspiring. You know, it's like he just exudes beta and like cringe. Have you seen him on camera?
I've seen him once on camera. Yeah, he's.
Have you seen him doing the dancing with the youth?
Yes. Is that okay? Can we do it this way?
It's just cringeworthy, and just to see him come out of the loja. But like you said,
but liberals like that.
He's
stuff.
Not. Yeah, I know. They think it's cool. They think it's hip.
They think it's dope.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's groovy. It's what young people want. It's just contemporary. Peter, young Paul, and Mary cringe. Dancing music. Yeah, it's cringeworthy. But I've heard that he's lost a lot of support in the Philippines, particularly on the abuse. They're having their own abuse crisis right now in the Philippines.
They are.
And I don't know. He's like the last guy I would vote for. So I just can't see anyone voting for him. But I agree. He's in the top. And for him, the gospel is Francis. Francis is the greatest thing in the white cassock since white bread.
Totally.
Love you it. Know his and nickname? White rice.
You know his nickname, which probably gives him.
I don't know his nickname. What's his nickname?
He's called the Asian Francis.
I mean,
this has to make him just really happy. It's like calling him the Asian Elvis 40 years ago or something. He's the Asian Francis. And he's wildly pro LGBT. Again, this might have garnered enough attention from moderates. I don't really think they care. That's the other thing, though.
Right.
I think it's not quite an electoral system in the Democratic Republican sense. So I think they might not care. But he has been wildly supportive of the LGBT agenda, and this might be a bit of a yellow flag even to the moderates, who you can dupe 99% of the time, given the sexual abuse crisis. But I don't know. He seems to be an up and comer. I don't know. I don't follow it super closely. So maybe he's lost some steam. Maybe just this is what I was saying about why I really ultimately don't think that we'll see a retirement. I think the sexual abuse scandal has thrown such a monkey wrench in the Less plans. I think it makes it really hard to predict. They're like, let's just keep going. Like, no, I mean, look, Francis. This is the same thing I said to Michael Voris. I've shared this private conversation one-on-one where it was like, 5 minutes after I heard the McCarrick stuff broke, I'm like, I was texting with Mike, and I was like, whoa. And he goes, yeah, so Francis is out. And I was like, ooh, I don't think so. I mean, this is just what always governs me. It's fallible. It could be wrong. But my view of the left is they do what you should do with political power. You get it. You hang on. You don't apologize, and you never bow out. I said,
yeah, no, but that's not the point. That's not the point. They're going to keep going with the Tagle or whomever, and they don't need Francis. Their end game is not make Francis a saint, which they probably will. Their end game is get LGBT, change the catechism, Eucharist for civilly married, divorced and remarried, and women deacons and married priests. That's the St. Gallen, and have canon law wishy-wishy so we can have our fun on the sides, business with benefits. That is the agenda of St. Gallen Mafia, and ultimately destroy the church. They don't need Francis for that.
But they 100% Toddley
will
agree.
Do it all the day long.
That's the agenda. But you can't – what these conclaves show is even with the majority, even as much as I'm a skeptic, right, I always think the worst – I mean, I don't always. I usually think the worst thing is going to happen. They've padded the cardinalate. But still, why toss it up when they're like, maybe there's some moderates that would vote against the liberal wing in a thing? Like, if it's a 90%, which is, you're never more certain than 90% in a conclave, is my not super trained opinion on this. But why toss it up? It's 100% with Francis. Just let him keep going. He's already said, look, I won't say one word. And that was a media test. That was a litmus test. World media was on board. They're not going to, I don't think the world media is going to let him get cooked that hard. I don't think Wall Street Journal ran his picture and said they did nothing at this sex abuse summit. But I think it'll be out of the media in a couple days. The particularly leftist outfits with WSJ is not. And I think they're not going to let him get super cooked. And I think it'll be back to business as usual. And the world media is part of the team. The world media is team Francis. He's team world. So, we'll see. Look, we'll see.
We'll see.
I've been bad at it's almost unpredictable what's happened in this strange world of the church. But I'm just saying, if this happened, I mean, they can keep going without, they don't need a new guy. A new guy might be nice, but I don't know.
The other thing about Tagle,
we'll see.
The other thing about Tagle is he is outright, yes, let married, civilly divorced and remarried people receive communion. He is like on board of Shakluna, Francis, Chile bishops. He's open about it. Now, I got a big red pill for everybody. So everybody get a glass of water, a big glass of water, or a shot glass with some Jack Daniels in it. Guess who appointed this liberal, crazy Filipino Tagle to the College Cardinals? B16.
Benedict
XVI, folks. Y'all need to realize that Benedict XVI is not this arch conservative that we were all told that he was. He is not. Yes, he's to the right of Francis. But he said Francis's pontificate is in continuity with his own. He chooses guys like Tagle. I mean, that's a red pill that we're all choking down in 2019, that Benedict XVI, our Papa, the one who gave us Summorum Pontificum and the Latin Mass, and the guy who wore fancy vestments and dusted off stuff from Pius XII's, storage unit. That guy was not an ironclad, rock-ribbed, Thomist conservative in theology or in liturgy. That's a hard red pill.
Or in ecclesiology, evidently, if you're making you're making appointments like this. And we've recounted some of the other bad ones on the show.
Yeah. So Tagle brought to you by Ratzinger.
B16.
Yeah, Benedict 16th. So that's our top three. We got Turkson, and we both agree Turkson's number one. I suggested Scola as the compromise conservative, and Tagle. Now I have a few others. Do you have any others, Tim?
I think I have some off the cuff that I'll probably agree with yours.
Okay, so
you go.
I would think if they wanted to go very radical, especially the German bishops wanted to ensure their agenda and make sure that it doesn't get sidetracked by Asian politics or whatever. Schönborn, that rascally right, Schönborn, would be the perfect Francis 2.0, right? Yeah. And he would be able to rally the German support, which is really what's behind Francis. And we, you know, back in John Paul II days, and everybody thought, oh, Schönborn, you know, he helped the catechism. He's so conservative. He's a Dominican. The guy is not. You know, the guy is just.
He would do the Napa rails. Valley talks out here. The California conservative. I had to red pill all my friends in California. Yeah. Like, he does Napa Valley talks. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. That's not a conservatives club. I totally agree. This is who I would have. When you're like German wing, I'm like, okay, Casper's a marked man. He's in the powerful wing of the liberal wing of the church.
But everyone too old.
Knows who he is. And he's old.
He's B16 era.
He's B16 coming of age era. Right. Yeah. So he's old. Marx, everyone knows. I mean, even the name, that just doesn't sound right. You know, Pope Marx. Even they don't want that. They want a guy that looks half decent. Conservatives were saying Schönborn even up until the time when he gave his he said the official endorsement. Remember, he was basically the guy that vetted Amoris Laetitia, mm-hmm. not Mueller.
Yeah.
And he said, no, Pope Francis's interpretation is what we're going to go with. And it's 100% fine. Don't worry about doctrine, people.
Yeah,
and
Francis bragged about that. He said
after that.
Francis says Schönborn vouches for it for being Orthodox. And I was like, so what?
So, right. I don't. Yeah, he sounds as bad as you. Yeah. Like, what does that do for me? No, I agree. He would be I think not just he would be the Austrian or German wing candidate. I believe if there's a Euro guy that they're going to go for, it would be Schönborn.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good call.
Schönborn, I'm checking his age. He's 74. So he's got the right age, you know, Archbishop of Vienna. He goes back to JP2. He's a John Paul II appointee.
Of course. So, why not?
Yeah, why not? And I can really see the European liberals saying, gosh, we went out, you know, into the world and we got a Argentinian. There was some baggage with that. Let's go back to someone we know really well, going back decades. Someone who's
European.
Yeah, he's compromised. He's an old card. I mean, he's not old, but he's been in the College of Cardinals for a long time. They know him.
Yeah, he's been around the block. He know. I mean, he's literally on. You know, back. He goes back with Benedict. He was one of the guys sort of playing the middle ground, hermeneutic of continuity guy. He played that middle ground for a long time. Came out under Francis as. The presenter. He is the one who presented Amoris Laetitia. That was the fact I was trying to remember earlier. Francis said, this is my guy. He's special. He presents it. And he's known as very respectable.
Yeah, he's like a noble. He's an Austrian noble. You know, he has the air of nobility and
blue blood
and finesse. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, if they wanted to rally to something like that, Schönborn would be great, and
agreed.
Maybe he would add dignity to the office. They might say something like that. But he does. It would be against the identity politics that they favor of having a blue blood German. So I don't think he's in the top three. Another one that I think could be in the top five or 10 is someone we've discussed quite a bit, and that is Ouellette out of Canada. He's another Balthazarian, quote unquote, conservative. But he's been carrying water for Francis, and I was surprised by that. But, you know, I know you kind of had that idea. Well, maybe he's like secretly helping out Vigano. But if they wanted to elect to someone who would do battle against Vigano, if they see Vigano as like a big problem, Ouellette maybe. Again, not too high up at the top, but.
I just think they hate all things North American. They hate the sense.
Yeah, but he's Canadian.
He's Canadian, so he's kind of, and he's French Canadian,
exactly
from French Canada. But yeah, I mean, he's
Congregation for Bishops prefect. He's basically in Rome.
It's doable. Yeah, it's not. if you're going to take any North American,
yeah, he's the only one.
North Americano, he's the only one. They do not like our continent, though. The Europeans have the old, you know, you're on the wrong side of the Atlantic thing. And then the Francisites, who was it that said this? Just Team Francis hates all things Anglo-Americano is what.
No, the Italian word is Anglo-Sasson. Anglo-Sasson.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it was from the Latin American wing of the church. Oh, it's yes. Just capitalist, North American. They're pigs at the rut and the gluttony of the trough, you know. So, yeah, I mean, he's probably set himself apart. Hey, I'm French Canadian. I'm a lib. I'm with you guys. Maybe. I mean, he would be the guy. If anyone from this entire freaking continent gets it, it would be him.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Ouellette, it seems, I'm sure there's lots of backdoor discussions, of his own accord, came out. He's the only cardinal I know of who's come out pen and paper against Vigano.
Yeah, it's true. He might have been sticking his name out there.
Either he was sticking his name out there or Pope Francis trusted him enough and saw him as clean enough and respectable and conservative enough. He said, okay, let's have Ouellette issue the rebuttal to Vigano. So just because of that, I think, well, maybe in Rome, they have a special admiration for Ouellette. And he's kind of the Rottweiler for Francis.
Yeah. I agree. That's he's the one. He's the token from this continent for sure.
Yes. Now, the other one that I've heard of that I think is a low probability is Cardinal Parolin. He's the Secretary of State for Francis. So he's the number two guy. At the Vatican, he basically runs the show for Francis. I've been told that he and Francis are a little bit distant, a little bit estranged. Not necessarily at odds, but keeping their distance. And the idea is Parolin would like to be Pope, as most secretaries of state, cardinal secretaries of state, want to be Pope. Mm-hmm. Pacelli was Secretary of State under Pius XI and was just shoo-in elected. But other than that example, it's pretty rare for a Secretary of State because they so represent the previous Pope. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the cardinals resent the Cardinal Secretary because he controls the Pope, you know. And so a lot of them have odds with the Cardinal Secretary. So because of that, I think he's a lower shot. But the fact that he has support and that he is distancing himself from Francis may reveal that there is a shot for Cardinal Parolin. What do you think?
Yeah, I think for one thing, when we say number two in the church, it means administratively, right? So the number two in the church doctrinally is the you know, cardinal prelate of the CDS.
But you know, that's historically that only happened under John Paul II.
Oh, it was only under JP2. I thought it was under Paul VI.
Yeah, JP2 kind of
new.
Yeah, JP2 elevated the CDF kind of over the Secretary of the State. That was sort of a JP2 innovation. Historically,
doctrinally,
just kind of administratively. Like when people thought who's the right hand man of John Paul II, they thought Ratzinger.
Right.
But if you go back 500 years and you're like, who is the best friend, right hand man of the Pope? For the past 500 years, it's never the prefect of the Holy Office.
Yeah.
It's always the Secretary of the State.
Yeah, no, fair enough. They call him Stato and Dottrina, right?
Yeah,
CDF is Dottrina. Yeah, and I've heard this. I've heard this outside of that as well. Maybe people are just making a reference, but so the older, the more established number two in the church is definitely Stato, the secretary, but. Yeah, I don't know. He's a tougher one to figure out for me. I mean, that doesn't even mean that there's a ray of sunshine in there. I don't think he's any kind of a conservative. Look how he's acted particularly the last 2 years. But he just, I've heard there's distance between them in the last year, and I don't know what that means. Like, when there's distance between a conservative pope and one of his former sort of favorites. Even kind of a Ouellette, he kind of defected. We see these guys defecting. I feel like we just lose all the time. Conservatives just lose. That's what we do. We're the opposite of what Trump's saying. We win, win, win. It's like we defect. There's a trade gap, right? from right to left. We have lots of defectors, lots of turncoats that want to be on the cool left team. Whenever there's two guy, you know, disagreement or even just passive distance between a Pope and a Paroline type, I don't feel like it indicates defecting, but you're like, well, what else are they arguing about? Like who's got the better slam dunk
or well, whatever. It might not be defecting. It might even be, hey, I'm Papible. I'm going to. And then French is like, yeah, I understand. I mean, are those subtle conversations going on amongst Cardinals? I don't know. Do Popes tip the hat to Papible Cardinals like Paroline and be like, yeah, I kind of like you. You'd be a good Francis too. Will you canonize me if you become Pope? I'm looking for someone who will canonize me.
Right.
Any Cardinals who are interested in canonizing me, please put an application in.
Yeah, and Fagioli can't do it. You know, he's a layman. No, I don't know. I don't claim to know the. I mean, you know the internal workings a little better than me, but all of us are. It's kind of like a function of things that we've read, tried to put it together, intuition, and then imagination. At a certain point, it's like, shoot, I don't know. I'm always just thinking in terms of Father Elijah.
Right.
I mean, that's. I don't know. It would. Yeah, he seems like a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, he goes back to 2013. I mean, he goes all the way back with Francis.
They
seem to work well together. He's Italian.
Is he Italian? I was going to ask, what's his nationality?
Yeah, Pietro. Apparently he's Italian. And so he's rooted and he knows the Vatican machinery. So he's kind of a perfect Secretary of State. You know, it's interesting that the Secretary of States tend to be Italian. Even mm-hmm. under Benedict mm-hmm. and John Paul II. I'm just kind of thinking through them. I think.
Yeah.
Italians. Yeah.
Yeah.
You need your mafioso guy to run the operations.
Right. The guy that knows how to wear a suit on the streets.
I mean, Paroline, I mean, he looks like he'd be a great Pope. I could imagine him in the papal white, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He could wear it.
Yeah.
Could wear the hell out of that papal white.
He could rock that. Yeah. So, I mean, those are the only ones that I came up with. I'm sure there might be others. I didn't spend too much time looking at the Las Vegas odds of who would be the next Pope.
Those are never accurate.
They're never.
That's what I was.
I mean, up towards the top was Cardinal Dolan. I'm like, are you kidding me? An American, chuckly, New York cardinal is never going to be elected as the next pope. So they're
no completely a guy off. that's known to people that don't know, you know, much at all. Way less than even us about the workings of these things. Dolan is. Fox News type conservatives that don't understand the church well still think he's a conservative.
Right.
So he's got enough of that moniker to damage him on the left. He's an American. He's a Yank from New York. No way. Get out of town. Yeah. I remember, you know, someone at, I think at my work at the oil and gas company, which is mostly, you know, WASP type gentlemen, you know, looking for oil, engineers and geologists. They're like, oh, I heard it would be kind of cool if we had the first American Pope. What do you think of this Dolan? I was like, mm-hmm. I don't think much. I don't think. I mean, people might be wanting to know in a little more detail. Okay, what's the hope? What, you know, give us a little hope. So you're telling us there's a chance. I think it would be Cardinal Sarah, and you know, but that's the most numerous statistical hope out of a bunch of. I just don't see any time soon. It doesn't matter when the conclave is with the developments in the cardinalate. I don't see that as much hope at all. He has established himself as a strong conservative, but he's kind of quiet and dignified. That's all he's got really going for him. Because he's a well enough established. If the goal, let me put it this way, was to make him papabile, they didn't camouflage him well enough.
Yeah, no, he's like, a few years ago, he's like, hey, Ad Orientem is a great idea. Everybody try it. Everyone said,
exactly. So he's who I'd be open for. Because in a way, you could really be, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It would be an identity politics on the right thing, except he's actually really, really good and smart. from everything I know, and he'd be the best choice, and it would work on a lot of moderates, and it would work on a lot of those types I was talking about at my old job that were saying, oh, that would be kind of cool, first black pope, and then he's a really faithful, knowledgeable Catholic spirituality leader.
Right.
But I just don't see it happening, but he'd be my hope. I think Burke's a, you know, kind of a zero over whatever the denominator is chance.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look good. I mean, I was just looking at the numbers here. 10 of the cardinals right now who are electors will hit 80 this next year. 10. So we have 10 outgoing, including Cardinal Jewitz of Poland, who I'm not a fan of. He's a really bad guy. But we have 10 guys going out, which means there's going to have to be another consistory, and there's going to be more coming in. And that's going to definitely give the majority to Pope Francis. Some people say, well, there's a lot of buyer's remorse after the election of Pope Francis. They didn't know he was going to be this radical. McCarrick went around and told the American cardinals, hey, this Bergoglio is a great guy. Let's go for him. This happened all over the world, apparently. And some of the people feel that they've been squeezed in their diocese back home because they're having to answer for this crazy Argentinian.
I've heard that narrative.
So that's leading to buyer's remorse. Like, hey, we just need the lay people to chill out, open up their checkbooks, and keep writing those checks because we're starting to feel a little bit of squeeze back home. And that might be a consideration for them to go a little bit more conservative and not want to have a controversial, you know, something on the airplane, on Twitter, and in the New York Times every other week.
I feel like, remember that book Michael Knowles wrote, like Reasons to Vote for Democrats, and that it's just
never read it.
The joke is
burned in my fireplace.
No, I mean, it's the never. Do you know what it is?
No.
It's Michael. So Michael Knowles is a conservative commentator. He's actually Catholic on the, and it's Reasons to Vote for Democrats. And it's like a 200 page book. They're all blank pages, right? And it was outselling, you know, he's a Shapiro guy. He's a Daily Wire guy. And it was like, so I thought you were making a joke there. Like, and I never read it. It's like, there's nothing to read. I feel like I could write a book. Well, maybe I should sit on this idea, but someone should write a book and be like, things that conservatives do well or expeditiously politically. And it would be the same thing. It would just be an empty book. We do everything badly.
Right.
You know, we give away, we steal defeat from the jaws of victory. And I feel like there's never a lot of hope because they're not positioning themselves well, like we talked about with Sarah. That's
is that a good thing, though? I mean, conservatives do try to follow justice. They do have ideals. And that's, I think, what hamstrings us, if you want to, you know, say something negative, is that we have these ideals and we would never, you know, make that cardinal look bad, even though he is bad. Or, you know, we would never try to get that information on so and so. We would never try to manipulate the conclave. So the good guys are good guys. I think it's the same in the Republican Party in America as it is in probably the College of Cardinals amongst the good guys. They're, you know, McCarrick is going to go and campaign for Bergoglio all the day long and get votes for him. Burke isn't going to do that. Burke supporters aren't going to go around and do that.
No, I'm not talking about Burke. I mean conservatives. I mean the majority of conservatives in politics and in the church. They are the compromisers. So they compromise with the left. No, and I wouldn't put principle, because principle would be something I'd. Burke and Sarah, those guys have principle, and that's why they can't win. I would say that is a kind of a desideratum. Yeah, like they're just principle and they're not conniving. We need someone to be a little more conniving, but by conservatives, I mean people in the church that until 2 years ago were saying Schoenborn's good.
Right.
That were saying, I mean the conservative electorate. Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't. I'm not talking Burke.
I thought you were talking about Burke. Yeah, see, on this show, we have two versions of conservative. There's the lower C conservative, by which we mean Dolan and Barron and, you know, these types. And then there's the capital C, by which we mean St. Pius the 10th.
Yeah.
You know, Pius the 12th, you know, Burke, those kinds, you know, and part of the red pill is we're all starting to demote Ratzinger Benedict from capital C to lowercase c. That's one of the hard things for this guy right here.
Yeah. And I even mean the laity aren't part of the electorate, but I mean, I'm always thinking analogies to Republican Party, feckless. Republican voters, how many times do we have a rhino? I mean, there's a word for it in politics. Yeah. That's just all they put forward. And it's like, yeah, the things that we do well, it would be one thing. That would be a page on the Michael Knowles-like book, What Conservatives Do Well, if it was just principle. We don't play around. We just get the best conservative candidates. Not true in church politics, not true in world politics either. Why are we given almost every Republican cycle, aside from 2016, we're given a Bob Dole type, a muscle in the Senate, Bob Dole, Bush. They're not conservatives. They're lowercase c conservatives. So yeah, it's not even that we're doing principle well. That's what I'm saying. Conservatives in the world and in the church. We don't do principles well. We don't do strategy well. We're not Machiavellian on the one extreme. We're not principled on the other extreme. It's a critique. We should be both principled and, wise as serpents and gentle as doves, and we're kind of neither, and we need to get that way. That's the critique that I'm sharpening here. We need to be that way. I don't like the odds. As soon as the conclave happens, it's bad.
Yeah. One of the things I'm wondering is, okay, let's say we got a Pius the 13th. Burke is elected. You know, let's just say we get our dream. Let's let everybody have a moment of a happy place. Let's all go to our happy place right now. Let's say that happens. I think that it should be on the table to restructure the College of Cardinals. And here's what I would suggest to Pope Pius the 13th. Hey, let's bring the number back down to 70. I'm okay with an international representation. It shouldn't be all Italians. And also, let's take the age of exclusion off the table. So you're appointed for life. And when you turn 80, you don't lose your vote. Right? So if you live to be 98, you get to vote. And we're going to keep the number at 70, and it's going to be a closer, more personal relationship with the Pope, right? Not this, you know, there's 120 electors, and I think there's over 200 cardinals right now. There's 200, right now there's 223 cardinals, 123 electors. This is just too much. It's too much. Yeah. I realize the church is big, but the church has been big for centuries. And we did great with 20 voting cardinals. So I would suggest that canonically, again, not a silver bullet to fix all this, but Pope Pius the 13th, take away the age 80 exclusion, limit it down to 70, never over 70. When a cardinal dies, you get to pick a new one. Until then, those are your boys. Pick carefully.
Yeah, that'd be great. Rubber stamp it. In this, and at that point, yeah, let's have pigs with wings that are able to fly too. But I like it. This is not going to happen, but that would be dope.
Papal masses will be 1962 missile. I want to stay in the happy place.
We're staying in the happiness. Yeah. Like, okay, no more Novus Ordo. Let's take that and throw that missile right where it belongs.
I thought about this. What if to compromise, they just said, okay, you can use the old missile, but you can also do a ninefold Kyrie. You can do prayers at the foot of the altar. You can do last gospel. You can put in the offertory prayers. Basically give them the full option of having the Latin Mass in the Novus Ordo missile for like 10 years. And then after 10 years, just take it away and be like,
I got a policy. I don't compromise in my fantasy. If this is my fantasy, it is no vernacular. It is pure. If it's that and it's not fantasy, that's still fantasy.
Calls up Schoenborn. He's like, no more Novus Ordo for you.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, in my fantasy, no, we are making everyone in the whole Roman Rite do the real Roman. Yeah. I mean, not the real Roman Rite. The Novus Ordo is real as well.
Yes.
To put your hands down.
Historical. All your, historical.
Yeah. Historical. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't compromise with my fantasy.
Yeah.
I want nothing but Latin.
Yeah. And what do we do with all the extra cardinals that aren't? Do you just take the red hats away? What you would say is at Pius 13th, like, hey, I'm coming in. I want everybody to resign their red hat and then I'll reinstate you if I want. That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be dope.
That'd be super cool. They all resign from the College of Cardinals, and then he just selects 70 people, 70 men that he trusts and he likes.
Right.
And then,
or how about the Mark Levin American politics solution? Take all their red hats and just put in a bunch of 70 new guys. I like that too.
Yeah.
Just be that. Yeah. Like, you guys have failed us. Even the conservatives among you have failed us. This is what Mark Levin says about the American Congress. Yeah. Even if you're a real conservative, you've been terribly ineffective at being winsome. Obviously, look how much you lose. You can't lose and be winsome.
Right.
So here's 70 new guys. They're my 70 little minions. They are going to enforce my policy, you know, the old world order, the OWO.
Yeah.
That's what I would call it. Yeah. This is the OWO. And if I were that Pope Pius XIII doing it, I would be assassinated the next day and you'd have another conclave.
And you'd be a martyr.
Less than 30, and I'd be a martyr.
St. Pius XIII.
Yeah.
And then you'd have another conclave. Yeah. But you'd have a conclave with your new 70 boys.
Right. As long as they get in, then it's like Pius the 14th. Come on up, baby. Step up to the
Pius
plate.
The 14th. Just every week there's a new conclave.
I hope you all ratify my policy. I do not compromise in my fantasies.
Whoever becomes Pope next, please watch this YouTube video for suggestions.
For tips. Yeah. From a couple.
Yeah. What else would you do? I'm trying to think what else I would definitely change.
Oh, I got
I'd update Code of Canon Law ASAP.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. None of this. The local ordinary should do this. No shoulds in the law.
No should.
No shoulds, no coulds. It's going to be what happens.
Shall issue, should issue. That's off the book. I would start with the catechism though. And I would just be like, okay, everything in the last 6 years, get my red pen.
Veto, line item veto.
Yeah. Line item vetoes of obviously. And I would say death penalty. I would clarify the death penalty. That's just a personal.
Well, just say, hey, we're going back to Council of Catechism of Trent. I want y'all using catechism because Catechism of Trent has death penalty in it. So
it does. But I would clarify. I would clarify using my own new language for the old. I'd be like, the catechism would read, the church is very, very embracing of the use of the dead, the white.
Two varies.
Varies.
Issimus.
Oh, there's so much. We should do a separate show on that. I don't want to get
it's
rolling.
It's just our happy place.
Right.
Yeah.
Happy place. Happy Gilmore. Happy place.
I would also increase the number of dioceses and number of bishops. So there'd be no more of these super mega archdioceses where they have like 3 million people and 300 priests. That's not manageable.
I live in that archdiocese.
Yeah, I know. It's insane. You have how many auxiliaries? Six?
If
you need 5 to 7 bishops to run a diocese, break that bad boy up. It's wrong. That's not how Christ intended the local bishop to work with his flock.
Right.
So I'd break all that up. Yeah, we should do a show on that. We'll do a show. Let us know in the comments. Do you want a show on Taylor and Tim's happy place? The glorious reign of Pope Pius the 13th.
That's a good show title right there. Yeah. Normally the show title is the last thing to count.
Yeah.
We don't know what to call them, but the show title comes first on that one.
That's right. The glorious reign of Pius the 13th. So
here's what it consists of.
Yeah.
Colon.
Exactly.
Show.
Love it. Love it. All right. Well, there it is. So that means what do we have to do, people? We have to pray. We have to pray the rosary. We have to wear the scapular, St. Benedict medal. We need to live our vocations, be good moms, be good dads, be good priests, be sacrificial. Let our kids see us being sacrificial. And pray for vocations and seminarians. And this is going to be, you know, we like to live in our happy thought, but this is going to be a long reform. Maybe I'm hoping for my grandkids, but I don't see this without a miracle, without Our Lady of Fatima or Our Lady Guadalupe event breaking into history to turn the Titanic around. Right now, it's decades, several pontificates to fix this thing. So be a saint. Pray that rosary. Anything you want to say, Tim? So close it out.
No, I agree with all that. People follow me on Twitter at Timotheology2E's.
Awesome.
And what he said. Decades.
Yes.
Centuries. Decades. I mean, I hope we're wrong.
Yeah.
I hope we're, people sometimes get confused what we're saying. Oh, that this show was not a wish list, people. This
no,
was
not a wish list.
I think it'll be. Well, people get this confused. I'm like, yeah, it's very different. The two fundamental.
You guys like
things.
Turkson? No, we don't like Turkson.
No. Do you guys like any of these people you mentioned as likelies? No. So no. We don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
This was not a wish list. This was a probably list.
And if you have someone you think is going to be Pope, write a comment, but give us a reason why. Don't just drop names. Give us a reason why. You got to substantiate it. So, again, like this video. Tell YouTube you like it. Subscribe. Hit the bell. And you'll get notifications when these new videos come out. Thanks for watching. God bless. Till next time.
Has anyone ever asked you to explain a Catholic topic and stumped you? St. Peter, our first pope, once wrote this. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. The problem is it takes years and even decades to study sacred scripture, the church fathers, magisterial documents, and councils. Most of us don't have that much time, even if we wanted to. So what if there were a way to have all of these answers prepared for us literally at our fingertips? My name is Dr. Taylor Marshall. I'm the founder of the New St. Thomas Institute, and we have created an online library of video and audio resources answering the most common objections against our Catholic faith. As a student member of the New St. Thomas Institute, you'll have access to our short and informative lessons by searching for the topics that interest you. For example, how to explain the Crusades, how to answer the top 10 atheist objections, how to answer Mormons when they come to your front door, and how to easily and quickly explain the Eucharist, the Blessed Virgin Mary, the papacy, the sacraments, and much more. You could easily spend thousands of dollars taking classes at universities or seminaries, but our tuition is the most affordable on earth. Plus, you'll have free access to our popular certificates in Catholic philosophy, Catholic theology, Catholic apologetics, church history, and New Testament studies. So if you're struggling with a topic and you need help, we have resources and answers waiting for you. Take your faith to the next level, become confident in your Catholic faith, join the New St. Thomas Institute today.